looking at my old Morph Club folder. Okay, episode 32 was a TV show, so this is definitely episode 33.
Okay. Well, we've solved that mystery.
We are professionals.
Okay, welcome to Morph Club, episode 33. We just read Animorphs book 26, the attack?
Yeah, which means we are actually halfway through the main body of the books, which is absurd to me.
How did that happen?
I don't know. How much Living on a Prayer do you think we can blast before we get super sued?
Yeah. Or the mouth sounds about the tiger.
Yes. Oh, that was so good.
Mouth mood mouth song moves. About the tiger.
Yes. Tony, I don't remember the actual title of it, but it is beautiful and perfect.
It was just tigers.
Just tigers. Good.
That's our song recommendation of the week.
Getting More that club out sound of the way. Corner. Yep.
So I'm Megan.
I'm Carrie.
We have a guest coming on later in the episode.
So if you want to skip to around half an hour in, we're going to be talking with Zach Morrison, who makes the webcomic Paranatural, which I love. It's one of my favorite YA comics. It is very funny and sweet and kind.
Yeah, I am excited. It's going to be really fun. But first, we have to get through the bare bones of what happened.
Yes.
So in case let's try to strip
them way down.
Yeah, this book was...
I agree.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
This is not to say I did not enjoy it thoroughly, but it goes from, like, The Lion King
to like a Scooby-Doo
Lego planet.
Through Dr. Seuss Lego sets.
To Jake having another crisis where he thinks all his friends are dead.
Yep.
To discuss
everything. Of, like, what is appropriate in war, what kind of crimes must we subject ourselves to. And then it goes full Fifth Element, which I love so much.
Yeah. This book has everything.
Yes.
Aliens that talk like Fran Drescher. Jake kissing.
Yes.
Cassie.
Yes. Which is so great. I've been wondering for 26 books if anyone would ever kiss, and then they did, and I could not stop crying. I loved it so much.
There's also a second kiss.
That one is so good, too. Yeah.
I guess we should get into it quickly. So it opens with Jake having another dream about Cryak, which I kept almost writing as Crycheck.
Oh.
In my notes.
Yes. Well, in my fan fiction, that is absolutely
in my fan fiction. And so Jake, poor Jake, is still having nightmares about that, like
the horrible eye in the space darkness.
Yeah, like space Sauron, like space.
Yeah. No, they're
the
definitely
devil?
They're Lord of the Rings fans. I think space Lucifer Sauron is an apt description.
And then. Cut to Lion King Assembly, which...
You talked about this ages ago, and I could not remember where it comes in, but it's great.
I did?
Yeah.
I think you remembered that and then immediately wiped it from my memory. Because
like the best
I was,
fever dream.
I was just like, oh boy, they're having an assembly. This is great. I love that Jake is like, I love assemblies now because I can just be still and quiet and calm.
Oh, God.
Which is, like, heartbreaking.
Kids. Yeah. One minute in his day where he's not making life or death decisions. Life or death decisions.
Yeah.
Except, guess what?
No.
No.
I do like that before everything starts happening, they, like, introduce the characters. Like, we were talking in the last book about how clunky a lot of the, like, character stuff ended up being, because it was ghostwritten, and also because I think the ghostwriter had never done it before. I'm hoping that when they warm up, it gets better. But in this one, you can see, like, they're introducing each Animorph by showing them in assembly and how they're acting in assembly, which is a much more natural and fun way to, like, reintroduce yourself to the characters in this book. Like, Jake's like, I was just sitting there. Like, it was nice being calm because I'm always stressed out. But I could see Marco a couple seats ahead of me, and he's, like, wiggling his ear to the music to, like, try to get me to laugh. Cassie's asleep because
she works 17 jobs. Yeah.
Rachel's going to, like, break that boy's hand next to her because he's trying to hold her hand. Like, it's like, this
it's
is
really
like,
good.
They're condensed into their, like, this is who they are.
Yeah. It was the most
really
charming
funny.
Show not tell I've seen in a minute.
So I was just sort of reading this, like, oh, yeah.
Here's the good stuff. Give it to me.
This is, like, You don't think about doing that until you've done 25 other books, I guess. It's like, oh, this is very good.
Yeah, no, it really makes me appreciate how hard that is to do well over and over again and really enjoy when they nail it, which they totally did.
Yeah. So
we said this one is the last non-ghostwritten book, right?
I think we did in the previous episode. Okay. I think we forgot to say it in this one.
It bears repeating. Yeah, this is the last book by K.A. Applegate and presumably also Michael Grant until we get to the very end of the series. So enjoy it.
I mean, I think there's like...
Oh, there might be like a Megamorphs. That's
yeah, there's
them
like
too.
Things that are not in the direct series that she wrote. So I think it's like Megamorphs and then there's like the two Chronicles that we're waiting on. So they're there, just not in the main series. So it's going to be interesting after this... Beautiful, weird book. Yes. Beautiful, dark, twisted fantasy of a book.
Okay, so speaking of weirdness, the Lion King gets frozen mid-actor leap on stage.
Yeah.
And at this point, all the kids have been through this enough to immediately cotton on to, okay, this is Elemis shenanigans.
Yeah.
So Axe shows up, Tobias flies in, eventually...
Yeah. Poor Axe stumbles on stage. The Elemis shows up as their classmate, Beth.
Yeah.
And I do like that he says something like, this is the most humble form I can appear like, in, or something. Like,
be nicer to Beth. It's hard to be in middle school.
Beth alone and her braces. And Elvis is like, hey, what's up? Here's your mission.
First, I'm going to give you a lot of backstory.
Yeah.
Most of which I think is like a lie of omission. But basically laying out the rules for, okay... Space Satan and I, we're playing this giant game of chess, which is why we haven't just destroyed all of you first-handed. Once we tried to do that and we messed up the whole universe, so we will not do that again. There's the great image of the stars going out because of the destruction they've wrought, which always makes me think about like that short story, The 9 Billion Names of God. It's such a powerful image to see like stars go out. And that was more of a digression than I swore I would do, so end that now.
No, it was good. Okay, so he's telling him about this game he and Krychek are playing, and he's like, okay, this time, you guys totally should trust me. We're going to throw you on an alien planet. Me
You're going to have
Kryak
to fight, yeah.
Each get 7 dudes, and you guys are fighting for this alien race on this planet. So it's like a field trip.
From the assembly to the field trip. Here we go.
And... I love that he's just doing a really terrible job getting them to believe that he's not setting them up for failure.
Yeah.
So
the kids all spend some time in the barn talking about, should we do this? Should we not do this? There's a good rundown of all their different moral perspectives. Yeah. They eventually settle on, yeah, we should. But they also have to figure out, okay, but there's 6 of us.
Yeah.
There's 7.
And there's supposed to be 7. There's also, they spend a couple times in this book referencing Nazis. And not to get too into that, because that's sort of a dark topic for these books and the podcast, but I was surprised they were allowed to say Nazi in series for middle schoolers.
Like,
but
call
I
a spade a spade. It's totally legit comparisons. Yeah. But I also was not unpleasantly, like, I was pleasantly surprised they were allowed
just
to
like,
draw that comparison because it was so apt. And it's a powerful thing to talk about.
Yeah, like it.
A
it
powerful
felt...
thing to talk about. Wow. I mean, like, it's when you need to draw that comparison, it's good to be able to draw it, to point out actual evil in the world.
Yeah, and it just felt like they were respecting their readers' understanding things. Like, I think when I read this book, I was a little too young to get what that meant.
Me too.
But I like that they don't underestimate their... I mean, I think they're also writing for themselves, so this is sort of like, well, I can get away with it, so I'm going to write the characters as I want to write them. But it was also a little jarring for me. But anyway.
Yeah, given the state of the world,
Yeah. Anyway, so they're like, we need 7 dudes for our team. And then Eric the Chi shows up, and he's like, what's up? The race that they're, like, Kryak's team... are all howlers, which I spent the beginning pages going, what's a howler? I feel like I've heard that before.
Yeah, right.
And then
Eric shows up and
Eric's
we're reminded,
like,
oh,
remember?
That's who destroyed the god dogs.
Yeah, so he is a stake in this too, so he's their 7th player.
Yeah,
welcome
in this
to the
terrible
space
pickup
jam.
Basketball game. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so they all go to this other planet. I do like that Cassie briefly mentions, like, 7 players each. What is this, a football game? And Marco's like, football will be 11 people. Get it together.
Get your sports on track. Come on.
Anyway, so they go to this planet, And
they meet the species
like,
that they're there to save, yeah. who are the escort?
Escort? Their whole planet looks like Legos and, what's it, Erector sets, the...
Yes, yeah, and maybe Duplo, because I got a Duplo. Larger, blockier yeah. vibe out of it, but, like, those and, like, a drippy Dr. Seuss color yeah. combo.
I was definitely, like, as I was, my brain was spinning, trying to, like, have some kind of concrete thing, I was definitely thinking of, like, Prospit and Durst in Homestuck.
Oh, my God.
but anyway, it's a weirdo oh. planet with a bunch of towers that go every which way yeah, and they're brightly colored.
Yeah, so there's going to be a lot of choreography that I want to skip over mostly yeah. about, oh, like, the kids running care. Up and down stairs to different levels on the planet.
Yeah.
So, like, this would be a cool cartoon. Yeah. I don't want to get into those elements right now.
Yeah. Like, they do use this as part of a set piece later, but...
Yeah,
mostly...
and, like, it's a neat comment on the organizational structure of the planet, I guess, and how obsessed yeah. they are with filing people into guilds, that their world yeah. is also broken up into it, but skip it.
Yeah, so the Iskurt looks super weird,
yeah.
sound like friend pressure. they all have, like, really intense, like, guilds that they're in, which is kind of great. Like, we talked about Ancillary, like, the Ancillary series, by Anne Leckie?
Yeah.
Before, and they reminded me a little bit of one of the alien race in that. Anyway.
Oh, I love, God, I can't remember the name of them.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of, there was, like, the ambassador.
Yeah, the translator?
Yeah, translator.
Who's, like, the most absurd example of, like, I don't understand your rule set because my own is so different. I love yeah, her, though.
Yeah, it was really interesting. So it's sort of like that junior.
And that with the edges, with the very sharp edges filed down.
Yeah, so they all have, like, their guilds, so they're all, like, all about buying things and
yeah,
selling things.
Yeah, and we learned that a plot point is that one of the things they buy and sell is memories, is that that's mm-hmm. one of the obsessions of this species.
Yeah, they watch
they have
memories
a way to
back.
Transfer. Yeah, they have a way to transfer, collect memories directly from you in a non-destructive way and play them back for anybody else. So that's a plot point. None yeah. of the rest of this super is.
Yeah, so they sell some of Rachel's hair to
oh, that was good. Yeah.
get a guide.
To get a watch chain. Yeah, that yeah. whole thing.
There's, like, Eric cuts her hair and he's like, oh, I cut Catherine the Great's hair. So her haircut looks amazing, which is
this is
so
now
good.
She's evil Rachel. Now she has, like, this is her cool anime girl yeah. haircut, except, like, this isn't her book at all.
Yeah.
But it was a good side note.
It wasn't a meaningful haircut, but... I think it was probably also because the cover model got a haircut, much like the Marco one.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Anyway, so they have this weirdo guide showing them around, and they're looking for the howlers. There are 7 howlers somewhere on this planet, and they need to stop them.
Mm-hmm. They get attacked in a marketplace while they're walking through, and they're immediately like, oh my god, is this the howlers? We're all gonna die. They beat them, and they feel real good about themselves, but it turns out it was just members of, like, the war guild.
Yeah.
So it was just more escort, like, are super into fighting.
I kind of love the escort. They're, like, super weird, but yeah. in a way that's, like, they're described as looking super gross.
Yeah.
They are apparently really annoying.
Yep.
But
it's like
same, them.
But also yeah, you're so, like, earnest. You're so into your jobs. That's
they're
cool.
having a good time.
Yeah. I like it felt like in Discworld and Ink Morpork.
Yeah.
Like the extreme granularization of the roles of the guilds in that
yeah.
city. Which also, like, everybody read Discworld.
Yeah, oh,
so
yeah,
much.
Obviously. Yeah, it's like that parody of, like, well, when you go to this planet there are many things happening, and this it's like, okay, they get it. They're all in very, very distinct sections.
Right.
So they have a battle. The howlers do show up soon.
A single howler shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, a single howler.
And that's when they get their first experience of, like, howlers are just fighting machines. Like,
yeah.
they regrow their limbs. They're all claws all
they
the
have,
time.
Like, a spinny thing in the
yeah.
middle.
Yeah.
Like it's described as, like, a flesh lazy Susan.
Which is just a bad phrase.
Which was when I was like, oh, another, like, in this book, just more aliens that I don't want to kiss.
Except. Yeah.
And then, just wait for it.
Yeah.
Here comes
Mass Effect Andromeda, Howler's Edition.
So they fight the howler. It turns out howlers are real hard to fight. Mm-hmm. Who knew?
They all basically are nearly murdered because
yeah.
the howler can paralyze you with its howl. Eric
yeah.
is the only one who can get them out of it by talking them. Like, he's the only one unaffected by the sonic weapon.
Yeah, because he can, like, talk them down. And also, like, Jake is, like, been stabbed as a tiger.
Oh, it's real bad. There's a lot of animal gore in this book.
Yeah, this is a lot of gross gore. So they managed to get away. Axe is really upset because he had completely run away. Like, I think later on in the book, they realize that, like, the howler yell is worse, I guess, more how, depending on how sentient you are, because they're saying, like, the tiger form had a pretty bad time, but, like, for Axe, it was probably even worse. But Axe is not happy about it. They regroup.
There's a long sequence that I kind of want to skip over they get attacked by the howlers, they run away, they get attacked again, they run away. Here are the things they learn in this sequence. First, Eric gets a download of the howler memories, so he's able to tell them, like, they've never lost a battle. Also, they share collective memory. It's kind of suspicious, like, a collective that they've never lost a battle. Right. There's some weird moral stuff that we, like, we the reader know that Eric has learned a lot more about the howlers than he's letting on, but he does not share it with them. They get away again. In the middle of this, they also learn about the truth behind the Iskurt and why the Elemist wants to save them.
Yeah, I thought this is really cool, because it's like they've had a couple battles, they kind of have a break, and their guide in Iskurt is like, I have to go feed real quick, so you guys can sit here and, like, BRB, and they're like, wait, what do you mean? He's like, oh, like, my symbiote has to go feed
get into
pool.
A yort pool, yeah.
A yort pool? I can't believe they're yorts!
I know!
So basically what we find out is that an Iskurt, like, we kind of, there's, like, another alien race that was, like, a symbiote that we heard about before, or, like, the Skrytna also
the
had, like, two forms.
Two phases, yeah.
But I think there's one that was more, that was also a symbiote, but this one,
you're right.
So it's sort of, like, an established idea, which is kind of cool, because in this one, the Iskurt are basically, they used to be very similar, if not the same base creature as a Yurk, but at some point, they evolved, like, they didn't want to take over another creature. They built a symbiotic creature to live with, and they modified themselves to also, so, like, they have to live together as a single organism. So they're not hurting, they don't need to fight or conquer anything in order to live. They have their own way of surviving as something that used to be a parasite,
right?
And the Yurks don't know about them, and they don't seem to know about the Yurks. They're called Yurts,
right?
And Isk or something like that.
Yeah. So there's some weird morality about, like, it's never specified how sentient the Isk are, but the gist that we're meant to take away is, like, this is a better way. This is obviously a better way than what the Yurks are doing right now. So the kids figure out, like, okay, this is why the Elemist wants to save them.
Like,
this
seems
is why Kryak wants them gone.
Yeah,
oh, Kryak's like whole deal, did we say his whole deal is, like, he wants to destroy all sentient life?
Oh, yeah.
Like, sorry, should
we mentioned that they mentioned Nazis earlier.
Yeah.
The context is that Cassie is going, like, wait, he just wants to, like, control or kill everything that isn't under his control and just control the whole universe. No big deal. Just control and be in charge of everything. And so, like, this game they're playing is for the fate of the Iskurt. And the Anor spent a lot of time in this book trying to figure out why they're here, because they're trying to figure out, were we set up to fail? Are we supposed to lose in the game? Because the Elemist has sort of told us that we're part of the game. Are the Iskurt good or bad? Should we actually be trying to save them? And so
they're
when they find out about the Yort.
Yeah,
when they find out about the Yort thing, they're a lot more suspicious. And then there's also Cassie and Jake talking about the howlers. There's, like, a moral discussion they keep having about if the howlers are pure evil, because they're made by, when they see the howler memories, they're basically, like, made by Kryak.
Uh-huh.
So Jake, who's been, like, his narration has been really pessimistic and really, like, he's becoming this general of the Animorphs. He has no sympathy for them, whereas Cassie, who's, like, the empathetic one, is sort of trying to be like, hey, we don't know if they're pure evil, like, maybe there's something good, like she's trying to hope that they're not a purely evil, like, she's like, the idea of a race that's all evil is completely wrong. So there's, like, that discussion going on too in the middle of this, like, Duplo playground with wheezing.
Wheezing. Every time they have a second, like, together, shopping, whining, screaming children that are the Iskurt.
Like, they're like, oh, let's go down to the shopping level where everyone buys things because they're in the shopping
guild. Weird capitalism critique happening on top of all this as, like, a seventh layer.
I couldn't tell if it was, like, a critique or just, like, a parody.
It was like, is this a teardown of, like, the class structure of the United States? And it kind of is. But then it gets into, like, fiction. Wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets, like, because, like, basically they sell, like, their guide is doing things for them in exchange for later on being able to buy their memories.
Uh-huh.
But then they want something else later, and he is like, well, I already have human hair, so I can't accept that. But if you gave me an arm? Which I was immediately like, can't they just morph, like, something, cut off an alarm and give it to them? And I was like, oh, no, wait, that's terrible, too. They'd have to go through that, even if they can be fine. But, yeah, so... So there's, like, really goofy stuff happening, and then, like, the Animorphs are also having these, like, moral discussions, and Axe is also going through, like, a really rough time where he, like, deserted his, like, army group to, like, to him, as far as he knows. He deserted his leader in a battle, and he's, like, he wants to make up for it, and Jake has to, like, tell him...
You can't not do that by to sacrificing yourself. Yeah, I loved that side story.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's done so well with, like, these couple glimpses of Axe, like, being ashamed off in a corner when the rest of them are talking through details. And meanwhile, they're all running for their lives.
Yeah.
Like, throughout this whole book, like, there's,
Almost falling off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that Jake has to reinforce, like, you called me your prince, so you
that
have
to
listen
mean
to me.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, like, if this is what we're doing, like, you have to listen to me. You can't decide that what I'm saying is wrong just because of what you were thinking. Yeah, so...
So once they figure out about the Yort, the Isk and the Yort, then they get into the major fight of this book, or the biggest, like, climactic battle of this book. Almost penultimate battle in this book, I guess. When they face off with a whole bunch of Howler at once, everyone is horribly damaged. Cassie, like, Jake sees Cassie and Birdmorph lose a wing, sees all the rest of his friends injured in what he thinks must be fatal ways. And this whole time, like, he's running for his life. He's trying to lead the Howlers away from his friends, so he gets separated from them, ends up leading them on a merry peregrine falcon chase, and leads... Finally leads one of them, like, he's so desperate to prove to his friends that, like, we can win this. Like, we have a chance to take at least one of them, these horrible creatures, out, because that's still where he's at. He leads one of them right over the edge of one of these, like, Duplo Lego levels.
Yeah.
And decides to acquire it while they're plummeting, like, 17 miles to the ground to a horrible death. So he does. Yeah.
And, well, at this point also, I think he's kind of assumed that everyone is dead. Like, he was sort of holding out hope, but at this point he was like, well, if they're all dead, I don't care. I'm going to take out this one Howler if I can. So the acquiring it is really just, like, part of the process of getting it to stop fighting him.
Right.
But, yeah, so he acquires it, and it keeps falling, and he manages to morph into a bird and fly away. And he's not happy.
Yeah, he's lost and horrified for, like, probably an hour flying around. Yeah.
But then Tobias finds him, and Tobias is like, Big Jake, everyone's fine.
I love that.
Which, like, broke my heart. But so all the other Animorphs are okay. They all managed to demorph. Like, it was hard, but they managed to demorph. And then, like, Eric is able to project a hologram field. So they're all hiding because apparently the Howlers can't attack the Iskort.
Oh, right. I forgot about that.
And that ends
rules
up being,
of the chess game.
Yeah. And that ends up being, like, once he reunites with everyone, fact they're programmed ends up being a thing. But first, when he reunites with everyone, finally get a kiss.
It's so good, you guys. Like, go take a minute to read this scene. I am going to start crying talking about it.
It's so good.
It's so good.
It felt really earned, too, because in this book they kept showing, like, him and Cassie, like, their connection was really important because, like, they're definitely rating Jake as being, like, really, like,
demoralized,
weighing
and broken
on him.
Down. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, Cassie keeps being, like, she keeps trying to appeal to his
hope,
better nature,
basically.
And, like, hope, like, she's like, but it's not in a, like, preachy way or in a like cardboard cutout way. Like, she sounds like a person who naturally wants to believe the best in people, trying to remind people of that that's possible.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, they do like a big, he sweeps her up into his arms when he sees her again.
So
he's like,
good.
I thought you were dead, and they kiss. It's really sweet.
It's really cute, and then Marco, like, goofs at them.
Oh, that was good, too. That was a good, that whole scene was really powerful.
It was really charming. Like, he's like, where's my kiss? And he's like, I guess I'll have to kiss Rachel. And then Rachel's like, I would kill you.
Yeah.
So after that emotional moment, then
we also, like, Jake now kind of has a plan to defeat the Howlers, which he's arrived at by thinking through, like, okay, like, they can't lose all their battles. They're Cryax kids. They have collective memory. Something doesn't add up. Like,
yeah.
But if there's a way to get a memory that of maybe their defeats into the Howlers, maybe, like, Cryax will be forced to remove them from the field of play in some way because he doesn't want that memory spreading. So they have a whole elaborate setup to try to trap a Howler so that they can get memories into it.
Yeah.
But before all that, Jake has to morph a Howler.
Yeah. And they basically prepare for having to take Jake out in case the Howler morph gets in charge of him, which is terrible.
Right. They're all worried because they're still coming at this from the perspective that the Howlers are pure evil.
Yeah.
Which makes the big reveal I forgot all about rougher.
Yeah, because he morphs the Howler, and he, in his narration, he talks about being prepared for it to be, like a
shark killing machine.
Or something, a killing machine. So he's basically like, well, you have to stop me from killing you, because I'm assuming. But when he morphs it, he realizes that, like, he compares it to the dolphin morph, because it's like they're like a child, like they... It's fun for them to keep killing, but they also don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And he realizes that, like, they've been created to only live 3 years. They're children. Like, they're always children.
He gets the entire collective memory of the Howlers dumped into his head. So poor Jake is now carrying this around on top of all of that Yerk's memories.
Yeah. I mean,
he's got a lot.
I mean, Eric has also been carrying around the memories of this.
Right.
Like
the
alien
slaughter
race
of the Kimmelites.
Yeah. Which is
also,
hard.
Eric knew that they were kids all along.
He's
and
also
didn't
a lot older.
Yeah.
Like I feel like Eric has more perspective than the Animorphs. The Animorphs are like actual children.
True.
So
yeah, this is kids fighting kids all the way.
So like I understand it's an interesting thing to put in this book, that Eric has not told them all this. But because, like, obviously he doesn't have the same perspective on it that they do either, so...
Right. No, I think it's absolutely effective and makes sense
it's
for Eric.
It's a really good...
Right. Right. Like, these are... They essentially killed, like, all of his dog parents and his dog gods. Yeah. Like, you understand why he would feel resentful and wouldn't feel like he needed to share this issue.
Yeah.
Because, like, the truth is, regardless of that, he's in it, and they still have to stop Cryak, right? So how do you do that?
Yeah. It's really interesting. So Jake is saying, like, okay, he tells them what the Howlers are like.
Mm-hmm.
They have to lead the Howlers to them because they've set up, like, the thing, like, the way the escorts share memories is through this, like, headset thingy. So they have a bunch of those. They need to lead the Howlers to them. So Axe volunteers for this mission, and that's when Jake has to, like, force him to say that he's going to, like, he has
to stay alive,
what you have to survive the battle. So he leads the escort there. They knock him out somehow, and they put the headset on, and they broadcast the memory of...
All of the Animorphs.
All of them.
Yeah, all of their collective combined memories, not just of this fight, of their whole lives.
Yeah, because they're hoping that, like, if they understand that the things that they fight have feelings, and, like...
It's empathy.
Yeah,
I love that,
like,
it's empathy.
Yeah, it's like they don't, they're children, they don't understand yet. They haven't gotten to that point because they're never allowed to get to that point because Cryak has made them this way.
Right.
And
as we see immediately after, decommissions is an effective and rough way to put these war assets down. Yeah.
Yeah, because they start, like, disappearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like the game is over, and
return,
like,
all the pieces back to their box, which in this case is standing in front of Cryak's space throne.
Yeah,
in the void,
and he just, like, stares at them. And Jake's having a rough time because he's been having nightmares about this guy for a while.
And Cassie reaches up and takes his hand.
Yeah.
So they're all really like cute. Terrified and cowering on the floor, and Cassie's just holding Jake's hand.
And then the Elmist strolls in his old man body.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, hey, we won. And he and Kryak are like bantering because they're like Magneto and Xavier playing chess in that first X-Men movie.
Very much so.
And then Jake, as like a last like stand thing, morphs into Howler so he can sort of. I guess they also have like a hive mind almost because he's able
not
to
just
see.
Collective memory, but yeah.
Because he's able to see the memory that the other Howlers have once he's morphed, but his memory of what happened doesn't go to them somehow.
Right. I'm not clear
I
on
guess
the directionality.
He's not a real Howler. I don't know. Sure. It doesn't matter. What's important is that he can tell already that that Kryak completely got rid of the Howlers that they taught empathy to before they could transmit all of those memories. So he at first is like, oh, like our plan worked in that we won, but we didn't help the Howlers. We just saved the Iskort, which is our objective. I think he starts to feel for the Howlers. They're also like, they're
also
not
victims. Yeah.
Yeah. They're also victims of this. But then as he's looking through their memories, he realizes like one teeny, teeny, tiny part managed to get through. And it's the image of him and Cassie kissing.
It's so good. You guys.
It's so good. And it's like, that could have easily felt really cheesy and dumb, but it didn't. It felt like really like, this is something that's like important to Jake. Like it's, like he's been holding on to that this whole book. So it felt important instead of like a tossed off, like the power of love.
The fifth element was love the whole time.
Yeah.
No, it's really effective. And
so
effective. It's both E and effective. Yeah.
E and A.
Yeah.
It's EA.
We know sports. Or,
yeah. So they all have to go home after this.
Oh, God, right. Stop. Oh, but first they get one last scene where they're like, hey, Elemist, we did this thing for you. You got to tell us what it was worth. So he starts out very coy, like, oh, there's a better chance that in 300 years, the Yerks might happen across the Iskort, and they might find a better way. So, like, you know, that's cool, but that's way abstract, dude. You got to give us something better.
Yeah, I can't believe the Elemist is just like, hey, maybe in 300 years, everything will be okay for the Yerks.
Right.
Sorry, I can't my notes are a mess.
This messed me up because it's so close to that scene at the very end of the series where the dying character asks him if they mattered, and he's like, yes, you mattered.
Oh,
so
Elemist.
This is like a weird forecasting to that, and I love it.
Oh,
so,
okay, yeah.
Yeah, so he tells them, not only is there a slightly better chance that the Yerks might have a happy ending, but I can tell you something even better about what's going to happen 6 months from now.
So you remember earlier when I said that none of the aliens, like, none of them seem like kissing aliens?
We've gone on this before. Like,
yeah.
Every alien in Animorphs is unkissable.
Unkissable. Like, they're just all, like, I was starting to wonder if they were writing them as being, like, we don't want the kids to have weird feelings about these aliens. We want them to just be, like, really weird and ugly.
Sure.
So it's just like, oh. But then we find out that because the Howlers have this memory of this kiss in their collective memories, when there's going to be, in 6 months, they're going to have to kill the Sharfden.
Sure.
But instead of killing them, the Howlers try to kiss them.
It's so good.
And then, like, basically that means that Kryak will not be able to use the Howlers anymore. Yeah. So it's just, like, the goofiest way to end this, but I need this. I need this goofy ending.
Oh, God.
Where the Howlers just want to kiss with their weird lava faces.
Right, they're weird. It's like a renegade shepherd. Like, it's melting, covered in, like, these dark red cracks that light spills through.
It's, like, basically the monster factory about Mass Effect.
Yes, no, it's
what
truck. Yeah.
All the aliens look
it's
like.
A small
actually,
species of truck.
The Iskort also sound like they look exactly like truck.
Yeah.
These are all monster factory creations.
It's true.
That's what I mean when I say unkissable.
Yes.
You have, until you've read these descriptions.
Yeah, no, like, not even a mother could love. Except
triangle
they
bodies,
do.
Lazy Susan torsos,
claws
that are on hands,
claws
that are on top
claws
of,
on claws
on top
on
of
claws.
Your hand.
It's claws all the way down.
Giant blue egg eyes on lava faces. Like, anyway. There's two kisses in this book. And then
there's probably a lot more than two kisses in this book.
But then it does end on a downer where Jake is saying he doesn't have the Kryak nightmare anymore, but he does, like, and he's sort of trying to, like, he's saying, like, well, I think it was Marco is saying you have to kind of choose what you focus on. So he tries to think about Cassie. But he was having this dream where, like, he was with her, but then he turned and there was the falling howler is still haunting him. And that's the, like, slightly downer note we end on, but he is still also thinking about Cassie, so it's nice. It's like there's still hope
that's a good
in the downer ending.
Yeah, no, that's a good encapsulation of this whole book in, like, one paragraph is war is still terrible, but that doesn't mean we can't hope to be better than we are.
Yeah, so that was a fun book. Okay, so that was Book 26. We're gonna go into our interview with Zach now.
All right, we are back. So it is me, Carrie, and Megan, and
yeah,
now
I'm
we
here.
Are also joined by Zach Morrison.
Hi.
Zach, it's so good to get to talk to you about these books. It was lovely to have a brief Animorphs aside with you at TCAF. It's really nice to have a little more time.
I think we talked about trauma or something like that. At least that was my angle.
Yep. No, and by brief aside, I mean I definitely stood there for like half an hour talking about how much we all love these books
instead of
getting set up.
It's beautiful, and I'm
happy.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to read this book.
No, it was great to get back to it. This is my first time reading Animorphs since I was a kid, so.
It's really...
You remembered a lot of it, because when we asked about which book you might want to talk about, you not only immediately said, based on the cover, obviously, the attack, but you remembered about the kissing.
Yeah, I would not have remembered, so I'm very proud that someone did.
The problem is, like, if we go back 10 books, I wouldn't have read them, because I read, like, bits and pieces way out of order. I was just grabbing whatever was at the book fair, really.
Oh, man. I need an adult version of the book fair, which I guess is your public library.
But you can't get, like, I definitely got, like, some witch's fingers made of rubber that came with, like, my, like, Bailey School Kids book.
Excuse me?
They're, like, little, like, witch fingers, like, over your fingers that came, like, do you remember the Bailey School Kids books?
Yes,
like my
teacher is a ghost, like, oh no, vampires in the cafeteria.
Dragons don't make pizza.
Yes.
Vampires don't play baseball? I can't remember all of them.
Oh, wait, okay.
I was big into those in the second grade.
I was completely convinced that, like, a kid in your school had just started a weird bake sale side gig and was making something called Witch's Fingers.
No, they were just, like, Halloween costume parts that I think they found a way to sell in the off-season. But it was like, oh, if you get the book club version, you get a toy with it. So I was like, nice. Yes.
Obviously. Oh, boy. But you said you jumped around in these, Zach. Did you make it all the way to the end of the series the first time through?
I don't think I got much farther than this book, because I recognize the cover for this, but I couldn't tell you much about the plot. I remember what was the plot line with the like, extra Animorph who's, like, a jerk?
David.
Yeah.
That was when I started to peter out on him, but, yeah, it was weird. I think the first book I read in the series was the Hork-Bajir Chronicles, which is a terrible intro.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I remember my parents babysat, like, two kids, and one of them was my age, and one of them was a little older, so she was, like, the cool teen who was definitely, like, 11 or something like that. But she
had the
books.
When you're 7, everyone is a cool teen. Or they're 85. There's no distinction.
Yeah, but she was a huge Animorphs fan and, like, you know, would bring them to the house, and it would be, like, a situation where it was, like, hey, kid. Look at this weird book.
I got a trench coat full of Animorphs for you.
This is what the teens are reading.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Okay, welcome to middle school.
The corruption of our youth starts so early. Okay, Megan, did you ever have a babysitter who brought you something that you thought was, like, way super cool, but actually maybe it wasn't?
I did have a babysitter who was... Like, she was, like, a high schooler, and, like, at the time, I thought it was, like, she was like super cool because she would sit and like brush my Barbie's hair while I was like watching PBS with her. And then like the older I got, the more I was like, she was definitely like, this is all I have to do. But it was also like kind of cool of her that she was just like, I'm babysitting this child. Guess I'm going to do child things.
Yeah, no, I'm going to get on her level. And yeah. Her level is sitting quietly watching PBS.
Yeah. Yeah, I was not a wild child.
Oh, God. I also had my cool high school babysitter introduced me to the English dub of Sailor Moon and obviously changed my life forever. Nice to hear about, like, what thing entered your life kind of sideways. Ooh. There is, I hope that doesn't show up on the recording, but I'm experiencing a phenomenon called a steam hammer in my radiator right now, so I'm going to just mark that time code down.
Oh, I can kind of hear it. I'm sorry.
It's okay. The world goes on.
It's just how it goes.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Well, it's
like
when
the steam going through the pipes, right?
Yeah, calcium deposits build up in a radiator pipe over time. Water gets caught in them and then bubbles out so quickly and strongly that it sounds like a sledgehammer on your radiator. And that is just New York pre-war building living.
I never knew what caused that. I just knew that it was a thing. Yeah. Like, I never questioned it. I was just like, oh, no, sometimes they make sound.
Yeah, I would not have, except I, like, obsessively Googled it to figure out, like, should I kick this to get it to stop, or is that a bad plan? And the answer is very much the latter.
It's one of my favorite noises at my parents' house. I always, like, imagined it was little gnomes in the walls hitting things with hammers.
Yeah, I mean, the nice fable that I tell myself is it's, like, giants forging a sword somewhere on another plane, but alas.
That's great.
Where do we start with this book? Yeah. Like, this Lego planet, like, I think the only thing I remembered about this book going in was someone describing this to me as, like, the book with, like, the Lego planet and, like, the weird, and, like, going in, I was like, I did not remember how, like, the rest of this book is very different in tone from the weird planet.
Yeah, so. Dr. Seuss Lego planet with murder hunt.
You know, as you do. I completely misremembered this. My only memory of the Howlers is, I think I must have confused this with a different book, because I had a vague memory of them, like, running desperately through a jungle away from the Howlers, so maybe I just fixated on that one really dramatic battle scene where they're, like, diving through plants and trying to figure out where the Dr. Seuss ledges end so they can trick these children into running off of them.
Well, also, like, the brief flash of the Howlers killing Gumbies in a forest.
Yes! Oh, no! Jungle Gumbies!
Like, one of the races they kill are just a bunch of Gumbies in a forest. Which is, like, really sad. Like, it's written as really sad, but also, they're literally described as they look like Gumby.
And, like, the rest of it is so tragic. Like, their name for themselves is, like, Grabthar's Children or something. So they're, like, these poor Gumby kids, like, walk up to the Howlers and extend a hand in friendship, which does not go well, as you might imagine.
And they write it like they're mystified that anyone would hurt them.
Yeah. Which is like, it's like the Pimalites, right? Like, you are also mangling the pronunciation of their name to be Pedialites, but the same deal of, like, these are people who don't understand the concept of violence suddenly coming face to face with a species created to do violence. Ooh, and also to learn to love in the end, but, you know, some mess in between.
Yeah.
I just keep getting stuck on, like, the descriptions of every alien in the Animorphs. So, like, I just get, like, in circles of, like, how do they look? like, this description is very long, but I still don't understand.
Yeah, and the Discord.
I feel like each discrete component of the alien is described really clearly. Like, we know there's a lazy Susan on the Howlers, but I still can't, like, I can't get my brain to gestalt it all together. Like, how do they fit? How do they interact?
And they have extra hand claws with claws on the claws. They have the big eye.
What's the Pokemon that's like a rock with claws? And it has a really little middle, and then there's like a bug sticking out the top. Okay, never mind.
No,
never mind.
I
don't. It's like in a new generation. My knowledge stops at like Gen 2.
this isn't a cute one, so I don't think I remember the name.
I should know this. What, could you describe it again?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to say the same bad description. You ready?
Yeah.
What's the Pokemon that's like a rock with a skinny part in the middle, and there's like a bug and claws coming out the top? It's like layers of sediment stacked up is what I'm remembering.
The one, there's one that's like a snail almost?
Or maybe, not a snail. Maybe it's confusing like a rock. The snail.
Is it like, snail? Does it start as two
or,
hands?
Yeah, is it like yes. hands?
Yes, it's not the one that's like.
I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, yeah, it's called, right. but I can picture it.
Well, tweet at us. That's
like
the howler.
That with a big eye.
Yeah.
I pictured it for some reason like the, what was it? I think it was the first Thor movie. There's like a weird robot that shoots lasers from its face.
Oh.
That's what I pictured for some reason.
I like that though. That's oddly friendlier to me than the way they're yeah. the flesh creature described in the books.
Yeah.
Are there any other weird aliens from other books that stuck in your head, not just this one?
Oh, the taxons for sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's a bad one.
Yeah, I pictured them like vacuum bag with like arms coming out of that, but I recently. To get myself hyped up for this podcast appearance, I watched the first half of the Animorph speedrun thing you guys linked.
It's so bad.
That was so bad.
The taxons in that look so different too.
Yeah.
Because I think I had seen like taxons in like the book art.
Yeah.
So when I watched, I started watching the playthrough for the first time, I think before we started rereading. So when the taxons showed up, they only show the head and they have like a very bird-like face, almost like there's like a beak almost, which I think is sort of in the description, but like when it's cropped and you don't see most of the worm body, I was just like, what is this thing? What does it keep attacking?
Weird deep sea creature.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like a squid if you just crop the large beak.
Yeah.
So there's a deep sea element to it. But it's all bad, no matter which way you slice it. It's a horrible... Mm-hmm. Ugh. Vacuum bag is good, Zach, because also the image of a vacuum bag splitting and the guts spilling out kind of lines up really well with what taxons do to each other.
They also are like vacuums because they'll just eat everything. Just suck it all up.
Oh, like a good family dog.
I feel like this is a good transition into talking about gore, which is something I completely forgot about Animorphs. Was the gore. The soda can-sized hole in Marco.
This book has so much, like, characters being, like, having, like, something chopped off, or, like, a huge gaping wound, or, like, someone having to pull, like, a knife out of them. Because,
oh, man.
How can we forget to mention that the Howlers have belts with, like, tons
of weapons?
Oh, right.
Sorry. Yeah. Like, they're just cable.
Yeah, they're just cable. They're just Rob Liefeld characters with, like, belts and straps and pouches full of weapons. Like,
this
why would they need that? They're already yelling. Like, how are you yelling strongly?
I think someone asked Kryak, like, tell me about your OC. And Kryak, like a five-year-old, is, let me tell you, they don't just have knife, they have knives.
They have knife hand, but also knives. And
definitely one eye.
Fletchettes, one eye.
Like him, like Kryak.
Yeah,
come on.
Exactly.
It's
definitely
just his OC is just him.
I love that they describe Kryak as not needing arms.
Is that what they... Yeah. Oh my god, that made him so funny looking in my head.
He's part robot. He's so scary and he doesn't have arms.
Doesn't need them. He's all brain.
Oh,
he's all brain. God, he's like a MODOK crossed with an R2-D2, but somehow much more threatening.
See, that's even more threatening than what I was picturing, which was the Eye of Sauron mixed with that lamp from the beginning of Pixar movies that jumps on the letter or whatever.
Wait, I love that. That's way too friendly, but it's very good.
I was just picturing, like, Plankton from SpongeBob with the robot part.
Okay, Megan, I can see the connection because he is very angry. He does have that one eyebrow mad all the
and
time.
And he's angry.
Yeah.
I may have started watching SpongeBob around the time I read these books also.
Okay, so between the three of us, we've created the least threatening space Satan we possibly could. Good job, guys.
Maybe this is what Jake should have been doing to get over these nightmares.
Yeah.
But, like, existential evil. So just picture him.
Mm-hmm. I do like that he's there as this existential threat in contrast to, like, the immediate horror, body horror of all this gore, Zach, that you were just talking about.
Yeah.
Because there is, it would otherwise be so easy to get bogged down in, like, just the physical consequences of a war, but they do such a good job of reminding you, actually, Brian's gonna suffer too.
Yeah, this is what grounded the whole Elemist thing for me. Like, somehow I completely forgot that the Elemist was an element in the books. And listening to the Morph Club, like, when that was introduced, I was like, what?
Sort of this isn't off enough already?
Yeah. It was like an angle of, like, with this guy introduced, the stakes on Earth don't matter as much. And they obviously tried to compensate for that, and I think were successful. But this really, like, got it on the level with, like, not just Kryak is there as a real force, like, in the book itself, but also the rules of engagement thing and talking about the past conflict really made it feel like, okay, no, this just extends the metaphor. This is, like, the conflict and you're the soldiers in this conflict, which made it like, yeah, this works for me. Like, I'll buy into this alien conflict.
It's a really good point. I hadn't thought about, like, the care they're taking to set this up so that it's on an understandable scale, because you're totally right. Otherwise, it would be, it's almost unimaginable, especially if you're a 9-year-old reading this, trying to conceptualize, like, the scope of a space war is not as immediately compelling as, like, where are the characters that you care about in this massive battle.
Right. And they tied it directly to Jake, which was good.
Yeah. I like that they're tying in stuff from, like, they've had a lot of episodes of books that have nothing to do with the Kryak Elemist thing.
He hasn't come up at all. Yeah, since Jake saw him.
Yeah, it's been, like, a nice period of time since the last time. Like, it feels like they're playing on another plane where, like, time is different for them, and, like, it's like another framing device for the Animorphs battle. But it also clearly gives the writers kind of, like, a way to not make the Animorphs constantly fighting and losing seem as repetitive yet.
Yeah.
But, like, I'd forgotten completely about, like, Jake had dreams about Kryak before. I had completely forgotten, but the way they tied it in, where it's like, this has been happening for him, and it directly ties into, like, they explain why, like, if the Yurk dying in his head in that way back in that book is what created this connection to Kryak, because something died in his head and that gave him a view into another. It was described in a way that kind of didn't make sense, but I was like, I buy it.
Yeah. Right? No, that was exactly the right amount of. Don't need to get into the details of how Z-Space works. Like, I buy it. It's fine.
Yeah, Jake's an evil Wi-Fi hotspot now.
He definitely is. Kryak got his password and is just remotely monitoring.
Wait, what do we think Jake's password is?
B-ball lover 42. Yes,
Cassie.
Kryak, like, trying to get someone else to type it in for him.
Get, like, a howler, like, you, push back your claws and type.
Except they'd have to do, like, hen pecking with, like, one knife at a time on the keys. Oh, boy.
Those poor howlers.
Yeah, those poor howlers. Like, even with this, like, I'm glad they learned to kiss and love, but they still only live to 3 years old. And what is Kryak gonna do with all of them, realistically, now that he can't use them to fight?
Yeah.
I don't remember if we find out. Maybe they come back? Because I know David comes back as, like, a weird Kryak pawn eventually. Mm. So he's got some other troops in this war.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that when they first said that they need 7 people on their team, my first thought was, like, oh, was the Elemist trying to play this so that the 7th Animorph would be on their team, then that didn't work out? But then very clearly it became that Eric had to be on their team for the Howler connection, but also because he has, like, hologram powers and he's able to, like, call the shots. but there was, like, a moment of, like, oh, that's, like, I don't know if they meant that to feel like that had been part of the battle that had, like, played out in a way that hadn't worked out for the Elemist, but...
Oh, that's a cool
The fact
angle.
That I was able to read it that way is interesting. Like, they've set things up that I can sort of, like, headcanon things into working into the structure, which is, I think, an important... Like, I feel like the ability to make things appear as if they were intentional when they were actually accidental is, like, good.
That's,
like,
a
you
skill.
Build your story that way.
Yep.
No, that is absolutely, like, if you plant enough seeds, in a thoughtful enough way, eventually you're going to be able to not just capitalize on the ones you meant to do, but like, make people believe that you've done all these other ones on purpose. Like, maybe this was too. You have to earn that. What else? The escort, I still don't have a good mental image of, like, where the yerk is in their body. Speaking of weird and horrible bodies.
I definitely imagined, like...
Like a tummy opening up.
Well, they were supposed to be, like, an accordion body. Yeah. So I definitely imagined, like, an IKEA lamp where you can, like, lift it up and there's just a slug inside. Which is, like, doesn't make any sense, but it's just, like, I don't know, there's a slug in there somehow. And they can't live without each other.
Mm-hmm. So there's just a slug-shaped hole in the accordion. And, like, the slug is getting pulled.
There's, like,
a slug. That's what
makes
the wine.
Or there's just, like, a slug terrarium, and you kind of let them out, and then you put them back in.
Oh, my God.
Just, like, blorp.
I would really love to just have, Hey Applegate and Michael Grant, just, like, from their brains, just upload what their mental image was that they're describing. Because they clearly had something that they were describing, and it's just some things are hard to describe.
I wonder...
Communicate, like, it's like telephone. I was like, I wonder what the base idea for some of these aliens were, because I can't make sense of them.
Are we going to Google escort and see what
I'm looking for, Megan, there's that special edition poster that has aliens on it than just Andalites, and I couldn't remember if one of them was howlers. So I have found that. I will link it in chat. I see the word howler. I can't yet tell which one on the poster is meant to be a howler. And I'm extending this because I can't figure out how to chat on Skype. And there we go. Just turned up.
I also did look up that Pokemon, and it looks wild.
Time out. A howler is the thing with claws. It's the thing with Wolverine claws.
Okay, oh my God. That's how the claw... I spent so long trying to work out how those claws work, and they just have Wolverine,
just Wolverine
claws.
It's just Wolverine.
Jake knows who Wolverine is. He would say...
Yeah, come on.
They've got four claws. It's cool.
Oh, you're right. Sorry. No copyright infringement.
That's what Cryax says. No, it's cool.
No, my OC is better. It's four.
Yeah, more claws.
It has more knives.
It's just the thing with Wolverine claws.
Yep.
It's like lava-styled thing.
Also, I think it has two eyes.
Yeah. They definitely sounded more like protrudy and egg-like in the book, though.
Gloppy?
Two eyes. My head.
I thought more melting lava, but this is like cracked obsidian.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess we should link this poster now that we've spent a couple minutes just describing it for you in the
deeply
best kind
stirred.
Of radio.
Whew.
Can we talk about the, like, baffling aside about escort believing in fictional characters being real?
Yes!
Please.
Oh my God.
Please.
I think we were trying not to go into too many tangents in our recap, but that was absolutely something that my mind fell out of my head. they're trying to get away from the howlers, and they, like, take a break in an abandoned factory. And the explanation for why this factory is abandoned is that there's a, like, I don't even know if it's a guild, there's just a bunch of escort that believe that fictional characters are real, and they, like, mess up things. Like, they're like ghosts, I guess, except they're fictional characters. So this building is abandoned until the superstition guild comes in and clears it out.
Which is, like, so if you believe that, what must you think about, like, the spirit ghosts of these memories that you're constantly seeing? Also, like, why is there fiction on a world where everyone experiences each other's lives all the time? Like, would there really be a need for that kind of narrative to develop when you have immediate access to everyone's experiences?
Maybe that's why fiction is scary for them, is because they only know real memories.
I like that. I like that a lot. Right, if you're working from the baseline that everything you see must be real, then maybe you see a play and you're like, oh my God, like, this for real happened, right?
Like, and then you hear a noise, and you're like, it's the plane. I saw it, it's real, and I can hear it in my room.
I took that whole sequence as, like, a weird meta jab at something. Didn't it read, like, her doing a dig at
It read,
like
she knew about fiction kin in the year of our Lord, 1998, and was writing into the future to comment on it.
Or she saw, like... just, like, fans getting mad about, like, just, like, stuff that's not important as if they're real. Like, it was really strange. So I was like, this feels like something a writer would write in 2017. Right. The fact that it was written back in the day made it, like, less weird to me, but it's just like, what?
Oh, right. And it, yeah, that interpretation, I also, that was my immediate read, but it feels out of tone with the other ways that they've interacted with their fans, so I didn't want to believe it.
I don't, like, it seems like it's supposed to just be funny, but a weird
thing, though. There are so many other, I
love the mall section.
Yeah, I love the Shoppers Guild. I love how into them Rachel is, that there are people whose whole job is just to shop. She's like,
I also love that Rachel used her shopping skills to deflect selling ones early on. Like, she got them to leave. She's like, excuse me, we're just here to use the bathroom.
Oh, God, yeah. Anytime they bring up, like, a practical social application for her skill set, I'm like, thank you. Yes, please. But now, I know there were other strange guilds, but none of them stuck out to me quite as much as the fictional belief and the superstition guild, which I loved.
Yeah, there's, like, war makers and
which is fighters. Hilarious. The war makers just attack people on the streets.
Yeah, that's very, like, that reads Dr. Strangelove to me in, like, a no fighting in the war room kind of way.
Oh. I really love Escort, even though they are supposed to be really annoying. I just have so much affection for them because they're so weird.
I like them even more. Yeah, if we take this as, like, eventually the Yurks are going to turn into this, that's amazing.
Well, the Yurks are, like, already obsessed with, like, moving along in the ranks.
And structure and bureaucracy, yeah.
So it's, like, you can see them becoming, like, the bureaucracy guild. Yeah. They just
oh,
went over there.
Yeah, in
300
years.
Their job is to get promotions.
Please, can we make an Animorphs spinoff about the Yurks trying to be good, just trying to be good business people in business worlds?
You know I would watch that sitcom in a heartbeat. You know Visser 3 is always running off on the job so he can just go be a tiger for a couple hours. And like, no, you have to sit down. You have to sit down and review this paperwork, please.
This TPS report is not going to review itself, and you want to get that promotion.
Oh, goodness. Oh, he wasn't in this book at all, and I'm only just realizing this as I'm ragging on him. And I didn't miss him. No offense to Visser 3, our dear, close, real person friend, but the threat of Kryak was so effectively done, and the threat of the Howlers that that was good enough as a villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had, like, the ingredients of, like, both scary villain and, like, kind of campy comedy. Like, they were both in there separately instead of in one weird being.
One beautiful blue package.
Beautiful, evil blue man.
Oh, I meant to ask, way back when we were talking about the book fair, were there any other series, like, ongoing serial narratives like this that you got hooked on at around the same age?
Yeah, I was super into Redwall. It's not exactly serial because they're each, like, separate. Well, they connect in different ways, but I was really into that. But I think I was more into Animorphs because it is so my cup of tea, like, teens in peril against ridiculous odds. Yeah, it was definitely... when there's an element of fear in the thing you're into, it really grabs you. And besides the, like, I think the first time I opened an Animorphs book and read, it was from a Yurk's perspective, like, in a pool. That might have been the first thing with, like, Elfangor. I know I looked at the Hork-Bajir Chronicles first, but that was the first full book I read, but I definitely
saw... In the Andalite Chronicles, there is that whole section, because Visser 3 is telling part of the story, too, right? So there is that whole chunk of his life in the pool.
Yeah, and that was super, like, disturbing to me. So, of course, I had to read the whole series.
Yeah.
And then the other thing was the TV show. Before I was really into the books, the TV show was on, and I was flipping through channels and landed on it. And it was a sequence where Visser 3 is, like, talking to some, like, television executive. And he's like, here, watch this. And he puts on, like, a TV show recording, and it's, like, this weird, nonsensical, like... You guys ever watched, was it Zoom or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, it was something like that, like bright colors, like weird nonsense stuff. And the TV executive's looking at it and he's like squinting, like, and the Animorphs are in a closet for some reason, which is even scarier. Do you remember this?
We watched this episode in our TV episode.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, it's the one, because the Animorphs are, like, infiltrating this, they're like, trying to get, infiltrate somewhere, so they're, like, hiding, and then Visor 3 is, like, looking at a TV trying to puzzle why humans are so into this.
No, it's not that one. It's later there's more TV stuff. Yeah, this time he's, like, trying to get, a TV special to air that hypnotizes people, because what he does to the TV executive is, like, while he's watching this recording, he takes a yerk out of a little, like soup can and slips it in his ear, and then the guy, like, stands up, and he's like, it'll be done, Visor 3, and it's like,
Oh my god, I'm so excited. TV Visor 3's obsession with TV continues.
That's horrifying. Also, that's the most straight-up literal body snatchers I think it ever gets.
That is an Are You Afraid of the Dark episode.
And that messed me up.
That's so good. Like, that's, like, the kind of scary that, like, when you're a kid, like, it gives you nightmares, but you also, like, can't not keep... Like, I was afraid of everything as a kid, but I also, like, would be compelled to pay attention to some things that scared me, because I was just like, but I want to know, but it's scary.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I can't believe you got hooked on Animorphs because of the TV show.
Yep.
That's wonderful. I'm so glad.
I'm like, legit glad that the TV actually brought, or helped solidify the hold that these books had on someone's life.
I mean, that was clearly the goal when they made the show, but, like, for kids who started with the books, it didn't really work. But I'm glad. I'm so glad.
I need, like, a minute to decompress from the vision of Visor 3, like, horribly, like, creeping up on someone with a can of, like, chili and pulling a slug out of it.
And not it so not a gross. Fan. And the guy was like, like, squinting more when the yerk was inside of him, like he was crawling up in there. Like,
no, thank you. That's very... I will not have that. I
will not have that here.
Yeah. Yerks.
That's actually how the series ends. I'm surprised you know, having not read to the end of it. But there's just a sting, and then Axe shows up on camera to say yerks. Oh boy!
Oh, this whole adventure in this book. I don't know if it's just that I watched all of season 2 of Voltron like last weekend, but this whole book I was like, this feels like a Voltron episode, except the stakes are like getting real dark sometimes. But then we're on this brightly colored alien planet full of goofy aliens. So that's like what I kept thinking about. I was just like, oh, it's Voltron.
Aw. Did you ever solve, I know you were trying to figure out the correlation of which child to which Voltron. Well,
I realized that, like, Lance, I really enjoy in Voltron, and objectively, he's kind of the worst, but he's my favorite character. But then I realized, like, he's just kind of like Marco in space, except he's tall. But then Keith has Marco's hair, and then Hunk could be Big Jake, but also Shiro could be Big Jake. And Keith is sort of Rachel? Like, it all starts to fall apart, but they are teens in space.
But I think maybe there isn't a way to perfectly line them up.
No, unfortunately. Unless you start getting into gem fusions. So I could start building...
No, this is too deep. Pull out.
And then that's when I realized I had to stop. That was a fun activity.
Yes, no, though. I do want to see these drawings at SPX, but I think that's the best form
of zine.
Them. Yeah.
My 500-page, like, conspiracy zine of, like, Animorphs in other fiction.
Oh, the Pokemon one was so good.
I
need to continue seeing your extensions of this universe any which way you want to take them.
Oh, we got to see the Howler high-fiving the weird Pokemon with the rock stack.
I pulled up that Pokemon while we were talking, and I've never seen, like,
Can you link it to me? Because I now can't picture it. I spent so long trying to break down all of its forms.
I don't know if I can send it through Skype, but...
Okay, what's it actually called?
Barbaracle.
No, it's not.
Barbaracle.
No, no, that's not correct either.
Barbaracle.
I refuse to believe.
You will look at it, and that is what it is called. It's Barbaracle.
Yeah. Oh my god, yes, this is what I was thinking of. How the heck did we get to this for my very bad description?
I mean, I googled rock hand Pokemon.
This is also a howler.
That's basically a howler. Right,
it's got like the tiny middle. It can spin its top around.
Just make its eyes blue, and you're done.
Yeah.
It's a howler. And then, like, the Iscord are probably, like, Alakazams. I don't know.
I had a weird image for them, which was just what I defaulted to because I shorted out on interpreting what they were. Have either of you guys played Monster Rancher?
Not in years.
Do you happen to remember the, like, monsters in that are like ducks with the middle section?
No, like, but I need to see them.
I wonder if I can like... No, I can put it in the chat.
Please do, because I just googled duck monsters and that is not what I got. Should have known better.
Do they have like red, blue, and yellow bodies?
Yeah, that thing.
That's alarming.
Should I still link it for Karen?
Yes.
I found it.
Oh, okay.
I'm also a little horrified.
Yeah, that's what I was picturing, even though it misses some details.
This feels right, though, like, spiritually, like, the spirit of this creature.
Yeah, the googly eyes are something.
Yep.
The stretchy middle is something. And the level of cute horror is also something.
Okay, that's... someone had to make that.
Mm-hmm. Someone was paid to make that.
I love that even thing.
So. Okay, I'm jumping back over to dig into the long list of questions we like to pick the brain of people who come on this show with us. Do you have a battle morph and a fun morph in mind, Zach?
Okay, battle morph, I thought about this. I didn't have one before, but now I think I'm definitely for gorilla because you get thumbs still, which is always nice.
That's good.
You can still shoot a gun. So yeah, that's
what
exactly.
That's what I was thinking. I'll get a gun.
You can just go full Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
As of this book, that's totally, totally in canon with this universe. You can have a bunch of belts with guns on them in this universe.
Exactly. Yeah, that's my OC is gorilla with howler weapons.
Yeah. That's a respectable Animorphs OC.
That's unstoppable. I think you solved Animorphs. I didn't know that was possible, but you won.
Gorilla with gun and earmuffs. Your can't touch him.
Marco's dream morph.
Yeah, that's my battle morph for sure. And my for fun morph, I think, would be like a bird, but because of course you gotta fly.
Sure.
But like a small one. So
like a blend in bird.
Yeah. So I could go in because I always see like nice corporate offices and be like, I wish I could go in there.
Now, but I'm not allowed. Hang on. Sorry. You can turn into any animal. You can go anywhere. And number one on your list of places to visit is a nice corporate office.
Look, you gotta have those goals.
You gotta dream bigger, Zach.
I'm a yerk in my fantasies.
That's how we know.
I just wanna know what it's like in the executive suite.
Literally, I'm like, I go to a nice hotel. No one would care if I'm a bird.
It's so, and you can eat French fries in there.
But also the image of like a tiny sparrow like bouncing on a giant king-sized bed is like, it's like, pretty sad.
Tucked in with like a bag of chips from the garbage just like on there.
Wait, I take it back. Yeah, being a seagull with a bag of chips bigger than you are actually sounds ideal.
Yep.
I take back all my criticism. I apologize, you were totally right.
Sounds ideal to me.
Oh boy, that's a strong answer.
I also love that you want to be an animal, but not outside. Because I fully understand this.
I would love to just be a dog on a cushion indoors. Yeah. That's not any better.
I mean,
that's the
same
thing.
My default fun morph is a cat. They don't do anything.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so. I just want to sleep more and enjoy my naps.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's fine. But yeah, no, there's a whole ocean, but forget that.
No,
it's horrible down there.
There's nightmares in that ocean.
Let's talk about the ocean Animorphs books.
Oh god, yeah, we're about to, the giant squid one is next, and I am not prepared.
I can't wait to listen to that. cover.
I had, like, I looked at the cover, and I had, like, a visceral, like, feeling of this book upsetting me as a kid. And I can't remember anything about it. Just that looking at the cover, I was like, I think I remember this one being a lot. So, we're gonna find out.
I am anticipating them describing in detail Rachel's eyes becoming enormous.
Oh, there were some morph descriptions in this book that were appalling.
when Jake morphs the howler, and his his
features sliding along his skin or something,
and like his spine is just sticking out for a minute.
Yeah,
not into it.
These books were brutal.
So...
I love that they were targeted at, like, 9-year-olds.
Yeah. Get used to it now, kids. It never ends.
Also, in this book, they officially have Jake mention that he's a middle schooler. I think we've had to guess all this time that he was in middle school.
I think at the end, it's, like, 3 years is the span of the books, and they end as, like, sophomores in high school because they're not ready to apply to college yet. So, yeah, this is, like, an 8th grader.
It's a baby.
That might be, or what have you got left on your docket, Zach?
I was going to say, is Axe is the Andalite equivalent of an 8th grader.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
Cool. Oh, he's definitely not supposed to be more mature than him. He must be about the same age.
Anyways, that was my last item. Just confirming.
That's good. We were talking a little bit before about, like, the strength of Axe and Jake's side story, even though it's kind of, like, tangential. You only ever see them, like, Axe in the corner of the scene, and Jake only directly confronts him that one time.
That
but
was
it's
one
really
of my
good.
Favorite parts of the books, yeah. Or the book, yeah, this book specifically, yeah. That was great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm always impressed when they can do so much with a character whose point of view is not the one leading the book. And, like, Cassie and Axe both, now that I think about it, like, there wasn't a lot for... When Marco was there and joking, he was doing great. When he was, like, having a hole in his side as a gorilla, that was rough, but still strong. But, like, Cassie and Jake and Axe were the main three people I feel like we got to hear about in this one.
Yeah,
they're really good in this book.
They're so good. I can't cry again. I've cried twice on this call already. Oh, man. I'm so glad they got to kiss.
You're talking about the howlers, right?
Yeah. Oh my god, just let the poor howlers kiss. I've been waiting for years. The first time they showed up at the Pimalites, I knew there was some shipping potential. That's my dark ship, actually, is the Pimalites the howlers.
If only the Pimalites could have been saved and they could have all just had, like, a dating show where they just, like, all kissed gently and sat down... And didn't kill each other. Yeah. Just were friends.
And the chi are there.
Uh-huh. Just like the assembly where they're sitting in front of the Lion King and it's quiet, but also it's a dating show.
I can't believe it was the actual Lion King.
Yeah.
This is a Nickelodeon show that this is tied into. How are they allowed to say a Disney product?
Yeah, what would it be when they did this? This arc in the TV show they replaced it with.
It would be like
the Cheetah Queen.
Two people with lion shirts doing, like, interpretive dance.
That is a much more on budget reinterpretation. Yeah. Or you just never see the stage.
Yeah, they just
like two kids in the audience.
Oh
yeah.
They got into a school for the auditorium, but you can only see two rows because that's as many extras as they got.
They couldn't afford more rows.
Right, and they can't keep the kids after 8 p.m., so it's, like, very, very clearly shot in several takes.
Yeah, this whole book would never show up on that show. They do not have the budget for an alien planet, one that's supposed to look like a Star Trek set.
They could not go near the ocean. I think it would be a little bit of a stretch to take us off-world, sadly.
I did like when they were able to trick the Iskort into thinking that Andalites had Vulcan powers. Because the Iskort had never heard of, had never seen Andalites before.
That was really good.
There were a lot of, like, really good small moments in this one.
Yeah.
I'm scanning through my question list. I don't know, Zach, are there any other Animorphs thoughts that you have a burning desire to share with us in the world? Ways in which this series has affected your life in general, your comic in particular, your deep and secret heart?
I don't think it was a conscious... source of inspiration, but it definitely helped reinforce the themes that I like to write about now when I was a kid, for sure, yeah. Yeah. This was, like, the first book series I really got into, so.
Me too. We talk a lot about, I feel like, the many ways in which I can see how strongly this formed my tastes in the kind of YA I like to read now and the kind of stories I like to write. Teens in Peril, I think, is how you encapsulated it, and that's a really good way to put it. Like, there's a lot to deal with when your life is already a horrible mess because being a teen is hard, and then to throw kids into something far beyond the scope of what they're expected to deal with is a compelling place to start.
Yeah, and it's really cool when, like, it's not like a metaphor necessarily, but building on existing fears, and you guys have talked about this before, but, like distrusting adults and then, like, your body transforming is just, like, the best fears to build on for a young audience. Like, I don't know, it's a really strong base to tell a story.
It's real good. Animorphs is real good, y'all. Yep, if you haven't already read it.
Have you heard about this book series called Animorphs? Anyone else
been
remember
really
this?
YA lately? I don't know. In that case, I think maybe we should wrap up, but not before we give you a chance, Zach. We already talked a little bit about how much we love Paranatural, but
do you
have anything you want to plug, and can you tell people where they can find you and your work on the internet?
Yeah, I will plug my webcomic, Paranatural, and you can find it at paranatural.net. And you can find me on Twitter at ParanaturalZach, with a K. Zach with a K.
Good distinction. So this has been Morph Club, episode 33. Next up, we're going to read book 27. Which is called? I'm definitely not digging in a folder to find this book right now. And I absolutely know what it's called already.
I mean, you're doing better than me. I'm just sitting here staring into space. I have no idea.
Book 27, The Exposed. And it's a Rachel book.
Exposed. It's a Rachel book. Oh, it's the one with the squid.
Oh, no.
The squid morph on the cover.
Oh, no. Okay.
I've been looking at this cover when I, like, Google Animorph covers. Like, I remember reading this. I remember nothing about it. But this cover is just...
It's something.
Terra good. Terrible good. Yeah, so we're back on the ghostwritten train. We're gonna try to get through it. Maybe we can try to come up with some kind of criteria to talk about them that's not us saying the same thing over and over.
I believe in us. If worst comes to worst, we do have the ghostwritten podcast episode to fall back on.
True.
So you can find us, if you want to talk more Animorphs, you can find us on Twitter at Morph Club Cast, or on Facebook if you search for the Morph Club Cast. We have a nice clubhouse on there full of really kind and wonderful people that is always a treat to visit.
Yeah, it is a nice, quiet, Animorph-loving section of Facebook. And the rest of Facebook, it's too rough.
Come hang with us and talk about these
teams. Come into our clubhouse.
And if you haven't already, if you can take a minute to leave us a review or even a rating on iTunes, that would be a big help, and we would super appreciate it. That helps other people find the show.
Yeah. So we will see you next time.
Bye.